This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Good morning. This is the Great Brian Kilmeade Show. Your humble DC correspondent, Griff Jenkins, pinch hitting for the Great Brian Kilmeade today. And I got to tell you, as always, when I hear that music start and I sit down behind a microphone in the Tony Snow radio studio here in DC, I could no more be comfortable here than I could shed my outer skin. I love talk radio, and it is a great honor to be here with Allison and Pete and Eric and try and bring you the best radio we can. And what a show we have today. There are so many big stories out there with Xi and Putin meeting across the globe, trying to create a different world order to threaten President Trump and the success that this administration has had. There is, of course, meetings at the White House. There is a major crackdown on crime. The administration making it very clear, Chicago, you are next. And the stats coming out of D.C. this morning, more than 1,760 arrests, almost 200 illegal guns seized off the streets of D.C. Wild crime, seven more shot. We learned from Mike Tobin today in Chicago. Just unbelievable, the contrast between what has happened here in the nation's capital, where I'm coming to you from, versus what's happening in other major Democrat-led cities like Chicago. But the story that I am most interested in, that really caught my attention, that I have covered extensively, the cartels, the president's attack, taking on the cartels head on. And that video we saw taking out 11 Tren de Aragua members in a fast boat transporting drugs. President Trump talked about it yesterday at the White House. Listen here.
When you come out and when you leave the room, you'll see that we just over the last few minutes, literally shot out a boat, a drug-carrying boat, a lot of drugs in that boat. And you'll be seeing that, and you'll be reading about that. It just happened moments ago, and we have a lot of drugs pouring into our country, coming in for a long time. And we just these came out of Venezuela and coming out very heavily from Venezuela. A lot of things are coming out of Venezuela.
Now, it's worth noting the history here. Back under the first Trump administration in 2020, you had the Attorney General Bill Barr indict Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro on narco-terrorism charges and cocaine trafficking charges, identifying him as the leader of the Cartel de los Soles, the Cartel of the Sun's leader. Now we have Tren de Aragua playing a big role. Remember, Tren de Aragua was a new thing under the Biden administration. Prior to 2022, not a single TDA member had been arrested. Now we have thousands that are being apprehended under this administration and sent back. And the president taking the fight directly to them with such a show of force. Power through strength, of course, is the administration's tagline. And you look at what is deployed off the coast of Venezuela. We now have three missile-guided destroyers, the USS Gravely, the Jason Dunham, the Samson, and now the Lake Erie. They are equipped with Tomahawk and virtual launch anti-sub rocket missiles. They have, all of them have these helicopters, the light airborne multi-purpose systems, the Seahawks. They're Sikorskis. They can fly everywhere in any condition and take out the enemy. But I got to tell you, when I saw that video the White House put out of taking that fast boat out, it took me back to a movie you may remember from the mid-90s.
Some say the greatest threat to America.
These drug cartels represent a clear and present danger to the national security of the United States.
Comes from other nations. Some say the greatest threat to America.
The course of action I'd suggest is a course of action I can't suggest.
Comes from within.
And I thought, I've seen this movie. In fact, Nicolas Maduro might want to get a copy of that on Netflix and watch that. Excuse me. And realize what's coming there. This is, you know, when I started my career in talk radio producing the great Oliver North, Common Sense Radio with Oliver North, we actually had Tom Clancy, who wrote those great Jack Ryan novels. We had Clancy on to ask him whether or not Jack Ryan was a character based on Colonel North and the fight that he took to the cartels in interdicting the Latin American drug running operations. And Clancy told us, well, you know, there are certainly traits of you, Colonel North. You weren't, Jack Ryan wasn't based entirely on you, but there was a bit of the bravado and the willingness to go outside of the box and take the fight to the enemy that was based on Jack Ryan's character. And it really sort of brings in perspective. If you think about it right now, you're all listening thinking, oh my gosh, I do remember that movie. It was a great movie where Harrison Ford goes in. They eventually launch a missile and take out a Colombian drug lord. And, you know, I don't know that that's what's coming, but it certainly does remind you a little bit shades of that, of clear present danger. And of course, the fact that we do have a very serious threat. Hundreds of thousands of Americans die because of fentanyl and drug overdoses in this country, funneled across our border and just absolutely wreaking havoc in every city, in every state in the country, from coast to coast. And this morning we had Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth talking about the operation on Fox and Friends. Listen to this, cut 17.
I can tell you that was definitely not artificial intelligence. I watched it live. We knew exactly who was in that boat. We knew exactly what they were doing, and we knew exactly who they represented. And that was Tren de Aragua, a narco-terrorist organization designated by the United States trying to poison our country with illicit drugs. Last year, under the Biden administration, all 4 years, 100,000 Americans died from drug-related, from drugs, from the use of drugs, many of which poured in from Central and South America through our southwest border. Now, we're sealing the border, but President Trump is willing to go on offense in ways that others have not been. And to send that clear signal to Tren de Aragua, Cartel del Sol, and others emanating from Venezuela, we're not going to allow this kind of activity. You're poisoning our people. We've got incredible assets, and they are gathering in the region. So you want to try to traffic drugs? It's a new day. It's a different day. And so those 11 drug traffickers are no longer with us, sending a very clear signal that this is an activity the United States is not going to tolerate.
Yeah, how about that? I mean, doing things, taking on these cartels in ways that Trump's predecessors were unwilling to do. Remember, we learned that when President Biden told us that, well, there's nothing I can do about the border crisis. It's up to Congress. I've done everything I can. Corinne Jean-Pierre said no president in history has done more to secure the border than President Biden. Turns out that was an absolute, blatant, flat-out lie. And President Trump, without Congress, single-handedly has secured the border to a degree that neither Bill Malusion nor I ever thought possible. It is the most secure border in history. And you've got now 3 months, probably soon we'll find out the stats, 4 months of having zero illegal aliens let in to loosen our country. And we also heard this week from the interim Border Patrol sector chief out in El Paso, Walter Slosar, saying that our crackdown, the administration's crackdown, is costing the cartels upwards of $1 billion shutting down their operations. And at the end of the day, there's a very strong message being sent today to Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. And Brian Kilmeade asked SecDef Hegseth about that this morning on Fox and Friends. Listen here, cut 18.
Are you worried about China and their relationship with Venezuela, and how will that affect our policy?
No, the only person that should be worried is Nicolas Maduro, who's running a effectively as a kingpin of a narco state, not actually elected and indicted for $50 million by the United States. And we know he's involved in the types of drug running that has affected the American people directly. So China and other countries are going to say certain things, and that's their prerogative. What we have there in the Caribbean is a clear demonstration of military might, President Trump has shown, whether it's the southwest border, whether it's the Houthis in freedom of navigation, whether it's Midnight Hammer in Iran, that the precise application of American power can have incredible impacts and reshape dynamics around the world and in the region. So Nicolas Maduro, as he considers whether or not he wants to continue to be a narco trafficker, has some decisions to make. And that's all I'll say about that.
So the message is very clear, and we have got a whole lot more on this story coming up. Meanwhile, Democrats seem to be absolutely lost in the wilderness with no message. We will dive in when we come back with former First Lady Biden's Press Secretary Mike LaRosa when we come back on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's The Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It is the Brian Kilmeade Show with your humble D.C. correspondent, Griff Jenkins, trying to pinch hit as best I can. And boy, are we honored and privileged to have our next guest on now, Michael LaRosa, the former press secretary to First Lady Jill Biden. He is one of the smartest Democrats I know, a friend in full disclosure, and he has a piece up on FoxNews.com right now that I would submit to you. Every single Democrat in the country, particularly those running in an election in the near days and months and years to come, because it is really drilling on the fact that the Democrats are in the wilderness. They don't have the right message. And the opinion piece is titled, "It's Not the Economy, Stupid, Democrats' Real Path Out of the Wilderness." Michael, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's great. This piece, honestly, I mean, I'm not just blowing smoke. Every Democrat needs to hear this. You know, I was recently listening, Michael, to Fox has a kind of archive audio thing they do from time to time. And they were playing a clip from former President Bill Clinton and his one of his State of the Union speeches where he talked about every American, the boundless hopes and endless dreams should be for every American. And it all starts back, he says, from a little guy from Hope, Arkansas. And it struck me because you drill in this piece about for decades, James Carville's old mantra, it's the economy stupid, isn't the right thing. You write, "Today, my party is jumping onto a shiny substitute considered to be the winning message that unites all, affordability, as if the idea that lower prices are better than higher ones is a revelation. Has a candidate ever campaigned on the reverse?" You nail it. You absolutely nail it. Tell me about this piece and what the message is to your fellow Democrats.
So the message is that there can't be just one message or one messenger, because this isn't a presidential election that we're coming up on. Democrats want power. They want to take back power. They want to use the power for oversight. And if they want to do that, you can't have what works in New Jersey and, you know, the suburbs of Los Angeles won't work in the suburbs of Tallahassee or Tampa or Illinois, wherever we're going to target our seats. And the point is that these races need to be run so that candidates represent their districts, and they have to go where the conversations are having. People aren't having conversations about charts and stats when they feel a certain way. And I feel like we've lost the sort of the gut for perception and what people are feeling on the ground. You know, it was really Roger Ailes who, in his book, "You Are the Message," said it best. You are the message. There is no other way around it. You represent the change that people are going to be voting for. And people keep forgetting that change versus more of the same was the first rule of James Carville's message board. It wasn't "the economy stupid." That was second, followed by "don't forget about healthcare." And if we keep getting in the way of somebody who's trying to deliver change just for the sake of opposing him because he's Trump, we're going to lose because we're going to look like we don't want to do anything at all.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the most poignant lines you have in your piece that's up on FoxNews.com right now, Mike, is the line where you say, are Democrats so disconnected from reality that we've unlearned the most basic political principle of all, that perception and politics go hand in glove? And you're certainly seeing that on the, I think, crime front, where you can give every stat about crime being down and record lows and you know, the murder rates going down. But then you talk to people in cities like D.C., Chicago, New York, L.A., and they don't feel that. They're not feeling what those stats are saying. But yet so many Democrats can continue to basically, you know, try and cling to the statistics despite it not being reality for the actual residents who live there.
Yeah, people just want to feel, they want to feel safe. As Roger Ailes once said, people don't always want to feel informed, but they want to, I'm sorry, people don't always want to be informed. They want to feel informed. It's the same thing with politics. People don't want to be overwhelmed with stats. They want you to just feel safe. Right now, because Trump is acting, they feel safer, at least in Washington, where I am. People feel safer because the National Guard is on the street. That doesn't mean it's going to solve the problem or it's going to tackle the root of what's driving crime. But in the meantime, it makes people feel protected in their communities. And if you oppose that, they're going to ask why. And if you give some constitutional, legal, you know, fluffy pablum, they're going to roll their eyes and say, that sounds like a politician who doesn't get me. Bill Clinton didn't lose a re-election by putting 100,000 cops on the streets. And no. Joe Biden won three of his re-elections after he wrote the bill, putting 100,000 cops on the streets. We can be for law enforcement. We don't have to knee-jerk oppose it.
It's a great point. And before I run out of time, I want to dive into one more thing. And that is, you write in your piece this as well, which I loved. Trump dives headfirst into every news cycle, runs into every cultural fire, from campus protests to celebrity dust ups like Sydney Sweeney's jeans or Cracker Barrel's new logo. He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't duck. Love him or hate him, voters can't miss that he shows up with an opinion and a position. He doesn't keep them guessing, you write. And, you know, that's such a insightful line. And you look at Democrats really everywhere. And about the only guy that seems to be trying to do that is Gavin Newsom. What do you say?
I think you're right. I think, you know, who knows if Gavin Newsom is going to be the next nominee. But he certainly has a formula, at least for the moment. I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of different Democrats try to out Gavin Newsom and try to out resist Trump as more attention goes towards Chicago. I think you're going to see Governor Pritzker's star rise amongst Democrats. But look, we don't need to replicate Trump. We just need to have guts like Trump. We just need to have an opinion on something. I go back to this line that Chris Christie used in like 2012, I think, when he was criticizing Obama. I was a producer at the time, but I loved using it. He was just like, what the hell are we paying you for if you don't have a position on something yet?
That's great. It's such a great line. It's such a great line. We're up against a hard break, but it's been great having you. Michael LaRosa, the opinion piece is up. It's called It's Not the Economy, Stupid, Democrats' Real Path Out of the Wilderness. Go and read it. Mike, thanks for taking time. And we'll be back on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If the governor of Illinois would call me up, I would love to do it. Now, we're going to do it anyway. We have the right to do it. because I have an obligation to protect this country. And that includes Baltimore. I saw where Governor Moore was asking me to take a walk down the street of Baltimore. Well, Baltimore is a very unsafe place. It's rated number 4 in the city, one of the worst, one of the most unsafe places anywhere in the world.
That, of course, was President Trump talking about he is going to attack the crime problem in Chicago, much like he did here in Washington. And a lot of that is declaring some sort of emergency. Now, in the overnight numbers coming out of Washington, there were 92 arrests last night, 27 illegal firearms seized in Washington, D.C. The total since the crackdown in D.C. began, there's more than 1,700 arrests and nearly 200 guns off the streets. I'm Griff Jenkins filling in for Brian Kilmeade on the Great Brian Kilmeade Show, and we are lucky to have Rich Lowry joining us right now, who often joins us to impart his sage wisdom upon us. Hey, Rich, how's it going?
Good. How are you? I don't know how much sage wisdom I have, but whatever I have, it's all yours, Griff.
You have great sage wisdom. I have forever said you're one of the smartest guys I know, and the proof is in the pudding by all the things you write. And I want to talk a little bit, because you're writing recently, Rich, about you have a piece called Government by Emergency is Actually a Bad Idea. And I want to get to tariffs, which I think is probably the biggest test as his emergency powers attempt is headed straight to the Supreme Court. And that's really going to be an awfully big ruling, whichever way it goes. But when it comes to just the crime stuff and using some form of emergency powers to do it, you've got obviously the united front between Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and Mayor Brandon Johnson saying, we will resist this every way we can. I have said it makes these Democrats look like they're basically saying, we like our crime, leave it alone. You talk to any resident in the streets of Chicago, and they say they welcome something to try and get things under control. The crime is bad, despite statistics that politicians cite. By the way, Pritzker responded to that comment about from President Trump about asking him to call him here. Cut 4 is Pritzker responding to the president's words. Listen.
First, I want to address the president's unhinged remarks a few minutes ago, begging me to call him. No, I will not call the president, asking him to send troops to Chicago. I've made that clear already. I know this has been an unsettling and difficult 10 days for the people of Chicago and Illinois.
What's your take, Rich, on what you're seeing play out? And it's clear the administration looks like they are going to go into Chicago pretty soon.
Yeah, I think they're going into Chicago. I think Pritzker and Johnson are morons, and I think they should want more federal help, even if they don't like the idea of the National Guard, who are completely harmless. I mean, what they do is kind of walk the streets and, you know, stand on subway platforms and stand in front of federal buildings. They should certainly want more help from the DEA. They should certainly want more help from the FBI. They should certainly want more help for ICE. Now, they'll never admit the latter. But why wouldn't they want federal help to go in and clean up the gangbangers in Chicago, right? Why not? And look, I don't like Muriel Bowser. I reject her politics totally. I think she's had a somewhat constructive attitude to this all along. Her initial take a couple weeks ago was, we don't need them, don't send them. But now that you're here, let's see if we can actually make a difference. And she's not denying the reality. In fact, she's hailing the reality of what have been pretty stark declines in important categories of crime, like carjackings in D.C. Why wouldn't she hail that, right? Does she want less crime in her city and her citizens to be less safe? So more Muriel Bowser and less Brandon Johnson, I think, is called for.
I think absolutely. And by the way, you know, she's quietly getting the nickname MAGA Muriel. So we'll see if she can find a way to thread that needle. I'm not sure that's working out for her, but you're exactly right. I mean, here she is. And to be clear for our listeners, it's a different situation because the federal government has so much oversight of Washington, D.C. than it does in places like Chicago and out in Los Angeles, where we just had this judge rule that the National Guard deployment was illegal out in Los Angeles. But the larger point is that, you know, at the end of the day, Bowser is recognizing that this is going to make people safer. And how on earth you want to be on the other side of that is beyond me. All right, let's shift gears just a little bit, though, because I do think you have a really significant point, something that really the White House needs to be thinking about, you know, government by emergency being maybe the wrong way. And what's at stake with this tariff? And of course, the tariffs, this ruling is set off until October to give time for the administration to get this to the Supreme Court. But this fight over the president using the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977, that's what President Trump used to unleash this tariff war. And the ruling that came down against the tariffs basically says the word tariffs aren't even mentioned in that 1977 law, and therefore it doesn't hold up. The president lacks the authority. What's your larger point here?
So I think the court is right, and Trump wanted to use this authority because it's very sweeping and totally discretionary. So it allows him, you know, to exercise levers the way he likes over negotiating partners, et cetera. I think the legal basis is very unsound, and I just don't like these emergency declarations unless it's a genuine emergency, which sometimes we say. I think the border was an emergency, and it was totally legit to declare an emergency. I don't think the trade deficit is an emergency. It's a chronic problem that you might not like. Trump certainly doesn't like it, and you might have a preferred policy solution. Trump certainly has his tariffs, but that's not an emergency. So I don't know what the Supreme Court is going to do here. I think it's kind of a close call. But I think the right thing to do would say, no, you got to do this some other way. And ideally would do it going through Congress. Throughout all our history, Congress has passed tariff measures, and that's the way it's supposed to be done.
Yeah, you write a really great line here in your piece. You say, essentially, if you have to convince people that an emergency exists, it's a pretty good sign that one doesn't. And you add to that, an emergency should also, by definition, be rare and of limited duration. And you're sort of painting the contrast with the border. That was undeniably a crisis that needed an emergency response. You know, myself, Bill Malusian, we spent years under the Biden administration standing down on the border watching thousands come across from hundreds of countries. And yet now with this tariff decision, it's going to be interesting because, you know, the tariffs are not a limited thing. Granted, the border enforcement is going to continue, but look, this border is already under control. It's never been safer. Now they're focusing on getting the millions of violent criminal illegal aliens out. And you know, he's using some emergency powers there to continue to do things that courts continue to try and knock down. I've said some of these rulings from judges trying to knock down removing criminal illegal aliens is really anything that makes any sense. And that's why you're hearing critics call them activist judges. But you know, with the tariff thing, it does look like while he's using emergency powers for this, it's a long you know, this is the way it's going to be from here on out.
Yeah, so this is probably the most consequential Supreme Court decision, will be the most consequential Supreme Court case since, like, the National Recovery Act in the Roosevelt administration, which is, like, a huge thing, like a core pillar of his policy to address the Depression. And the Supreme Court said, no, we're striking it down. Or the Obamacare case where, you know, Roberts veered out of the way right at the end. And they didn't declare Obamacare unconstitutional, but they were close. So I think this one will be that consequential, because if they actually say, no, you can't do this, this is the thing that Trump is most proud of, most personally invested in, a huge political commitment to it, a huge policy change. And for the court to say, no, it's got to go away. Wow. That will be thermonuclear.
Hey, Rich, let me get your thought. You know, I had a little earlier in this hour, Michael LaRosa, Jill Biden's former press secretary, that has a piece up on FoxNews.com about Democrats' messaging. And in it, he's basically saying, you know, people need to feel change. They need to feel, not see stats. They need to feel that something's being done. And so when you look at President Trump doing things like securing the border, removing illegal criminal aliens, blowing a Trinidad-Aragua Venezuelan gun-running boat out of the water, which was quite something. I've said that's like, oh, my gosh, clear and present danger. We're watching it actually happen now, 30 years later. But, you know, even with tariffs, you know, people were skeptical, but yet it hasn't caused crazy inflation. The stock market hasn't crashed. All of the critics saying things. And so to sort of a messaging thing, it does seem that, you know, by and large, a lot of Americans feel like he's doing something positive, that he's taking control in creating change, if you will.
Yeah. So he's a showman, right? And he loves the theater of it. And that's oftentimes a disparaging way to put it. But theater is important, right? What people see, yeah. What they feel is important. And that taking out that gang boat is just classic Trump. Like, that's a low risk military operation. But he posted on Truth Social kind of spiking the ball in the end zone. And every bad actor around the world is like, you know what? He does that to them. Maybe he's coming after us. So it has a deterrent effect beyond the significance of the act itself. The same thing, greatest example of this from the first term, was taking out Soleimani, which wasn't without risk, but it wasn't like invading Iraq. And again, everyone around the world who's a bad actor is like, yeah, they can do. He's willing to do that. Maybe I'll just, you know, take things easy the next couple of years and keep my head down. And I think in D.C., I'm not sure how much the National Guard has made a difference itself. I don't think probably a lot, but they're visible. And every bad actor in D.C. is like, you know, I've heard a lot about how tough this guy is, and he's sending these guys in camo. Maybe I'll keep my head down. So it's a classic kind of deterrent effect, and he's a master at it.
Yeah, I was interviewing, doing some hosting over the week and interviewing Ted Williams, Fox News contributor and former D.C. homicide detective. And he said that, look, at the end of the day, you can't deny, and these are his words, not mine. He said, you can't deny that even just the presence of having National Guard troops in uniform carrying guns with Humvees on the streets isn't making JoJo and Ray Ray go on vacation until they wait and see how this plays out. And the point is spot on. Like, you know, if you were thinking about going in and robbing a store, if there's a Humvee and guard troops in front of it, you're not going in.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that effect would wear off over time, probably, once they figure out, you know, the National Guard isn't actually coming and arresting me. But we're getting this arrest every day, every night, with a lot of guns taken off the street. And you keep on doing that night after night after night. That's going to move the needle in a really substantive and an enduring way. So I believe that's what's happening and hope that's what's happening in D.C.
Absolutely. He is the editor of the National Review and the author of a great book, The Case for Nationalism, Rich Lowry. Go to National Review, read his article, latest one, Government by Emergency is a Bad Idea, and see what you think about it. Rich, as always, it's great to have you join us and take time to weigh in.
Thanks so much, Griff. Talk soon.
All right, this is your humble D.C. correspondent, Griff Jenkins, filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Great Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be right back.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is the Brian Kilmeade Show with the D.C. correspondent, humble as he is, Griff Jenkins. Did I just refer to myself in the third person? What is wrong with me? I might be like a Bob Dole thing going. Griff Jenkins filling in for Brian Kilmeade. Having too much fun. It is great to be with you. And, you know, the Trump administration and President Trump himself is just having fun. Every press conference yesterday, he's, you know, watching a video on my colleague Peter Ducey's phone. But one thing that I think rings truest with Donald Trump is his authenticity. He just doesn't try and be anything other than exactly who he is. And people appreciate that. And one thing that he doesn't do is try and change his accent towards who he's talking to. You may remember famous episode where Hillary Clinton, the candidate for president, Hillary Clinton, went down to Selma, Alabama, and launched into the most bizarre Southern accent, trying to cater to the crowd there, the all-black congregation in a church, saying, I don't feel no ways tired. And people were like, what is going on? Well, that accent change problem that Democrats have apparently is hitting a would-be rising progressive star in the Democrat Party, Jasmine Crockett. Listen to her debut of her new accent here.
Baby, because these people, they are crazy, because they always talk about how Christian they is. Yeah, I don't know how many of them on that side are getting divorced because they getting caught up sleeping with their co-workers, staffers, interns, all the things. Yeah, you ain't got to believe me. Just go Google. You'll find some of it. I'm telling you, and the wives is being messy and petty. They putting it in the divorce. I'm like, ooh, that's got to be true, because your lawyer would know that they going to lose it.
I guess that's sort of an urban accent. I'm not sure where she wants to go with that. She was already getting a lot of attention for simply just saying outrageous things. But it's really remarkable when you see these politicians just blatantly catering to a crowd there. And it's interesting because you're seeing the rise of these, you know, younger Democrats that are really trying to push out the old guard. And we had the news this week, the retirement of one of New York's longest running members of Congress, maybe New York's longest member, I'm not sure, Jerry Nadler, who is stepping aside. I don't know if it's the Mamdani effect, but either way, he wants to give way to the younger generation, give him a shot. And so we here on the Brian Kilmeade Show thought you might want a little bit of the flashback into the Wayback Machine on some of Jerry Nadler's greatest hits. Listen.
The president elect, although legally elected, is not legitimate.
And when we have a pandemic like COVID-19 pandemic that we had, two-year-olds should have been required to wear masks. It would be child abuse for parents not to do that.
And we need immigrants in this country. Forget the fact that the farm, that our vegetables would rot in the ground if they weren't being picked by many immigrants, many illegal immigrants.
Do you condemn the attacks on ICE agents?
What attacks on ICE agents?
What attacks on ICE agents? And, you know, it's amazing, too, that as we watch people like Zohran Mamdani try and be this next generation who is an avowed socialist, that now the New York Times has a reporter saying, well, it's not really socialist. He's just all about affordability. It's not going to stick. Whether it's changing the accent or denying reality like assaults on ICE agents or the fact that your platform is avowed socialist by self-identifying, I don't think the American people are gonna buy it. This is Griff Jenkins filling in on the great Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
The most approachable, the most informative, the most entertaining, and the absolute best radio show across the country, coast to coast. This is your humble D.C. correspondent, Griff Jenkins, filling in for Brian Kilmeade on the great Brian Kilmeade Show. So many things happening in the world today. So much to talk about. But I want to go right to our guest now. We are fortunate to have the great congressman from Kentucky, Andy Barr. He serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, specifically that committee on the strategic competition between the U.S. and Chinese Communist Party. Congressman Barr, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Griff, how are you doing?
It is great to talk to you, my friend. And, you know, I want to drill into, as you know, and many of our listeners know, for years I've covered the border, and the border is more secure than it's ever been. But a problem that continues to exist, albeit the fight is getting much stronger against it, are the fentanyl that's coming across the border in record droves and killing hundreds of thousands of Americans, innocent Americans, many of them in overdoses. I've interviewed the present and former DEA administrators. I've gone to the DEA headquarters. I've walked the halls of the Faces of Fentanyl, a monument that just pays tribute to those Americans who have lost lives. And Congressman, just in today, you've been tweeting about the DEA says most fentanyl is sourced in China and that fentanyl causes almost 7 out of 10 overdose deaths in Kentucky. You have a bill just passed that tackles this head on. Explain.
Well, exactly, Griff. We're still cleaning up the mess left for us by Joe Biden and his open border policies and his border czar Kamala Harris. And really the problem among the many problems with an open border was that Chinese fentanyl producers were colluding with the cartels, taking advantage of our open border to import their poison into our country and into Kentucky. No, Kentucky's not on the physical border, but if you talk to the Kentucky narcotics officers, they will tell you that the open southern border was directly responsible for the deaths of many Kentuckians over the last several years because of all of that fentanyl pouring across our border. And you're exactly right. Drug overdose doses have been the leading cause of death for Americans aged 18 to 45 for several years now. 70%, 7 out of 10, as you pointed out, directly tied to fentanyl. And what we have been doing in the Select Committee on the Strategic Competition with China is identifying the source of the precursors of this deadly fentanyl, and it's China.
No doubt. And great work, Congressman, on this legislation to really try and crack down. It's interesting, the host of this show, Brian Kilmeade, this morning on Fox and Friends was interviewing the Defense Secretary Hegseth, talking a little bit about that remarkable video we've now all seen of the taking out of a Venezuelan Trinidad Aragua drug runner fast boat. And Brian sort of alluded to the ties that we might see, as you point out, between cartels, Venezuela and China. Listen to this here.
Are you worried about China and their relationship with Venezuela, and how will that affect our policy?
No, the only person that should be worried is Nicolas Maduro, who's running effectively as a kingpin of a drug narco state, not actually elected, and indicted for $50 million by the United States. And we know he's involved in the types of drug running that has affected the American people directly. So China and other countries are going to say certain things, and that's their prerogative. What we have there in the Caribbean is a clear demonstration of military might. President Trump has shown, whether it's the southwest border, whether it's the Houthis in freedom of navigation, whether it's Midnight Hammer in Iran, that the precise application of American power can have incredible impacts and reshape dynamics around the world and in the region. So Nicolas Maduro, as he considers whether or not he wants to continue to be a narco trafficker, has some decisions to make. And that's all I'll say about that.
And, of course, as we know, the first Trump administration congressman indicted Nicolas Maduro as the leader of the Cartel de los Soles, the Cartel of the Suns, for being a narco-terrorist and drug trafficker. Your reaction there, though, to Secretary Hegseth's comments?
Yeah, Secretary Hegseth is exactly right that we have a commander-in-chief now that is restoring deterrence, whether it's in obliterating Iran's nuclear capability or taking on both the narco-terrorists from Venezuela and the Chinese manufacturers of this poison and working with Trinidad Aragua and other cartels. The bill that we passed yesterday, the Stop Chinese Fentanyl Act, would apply crushing sanctions on Chinese entities and government officials that fail to take steps to prevent opioid trafficking. And what we found out in our investigation was that the Chinese Communist Party directly subsidizes the manufacturing and export of illicit fentanyl materials and synthetic narcotics. They give grants to these manufacturers, and they even hold ownership interest in these companies that are tied to drug trafficking. So this will help the Trump administration get tough on China when it comes to the sourcing of these materials. But then the strike that you mentioned yesterday that Secretary Hegseth was talking about and Secretary Rubio, this shows a commander-in-chief who is willing to use the full might of the U.S. military to deter this drug trafficking into the United States. And I applaud the commander-in-chief for using the U.S. military. And remember, this shouldn't be a surprise to Maduro. It shouldn't be a surprise to the cartels like Tronde Aragua, because the president, properly so, designated these cartels as foreign terrorist organizations in February. He deployed 3 warships to the southern Caribbean region, and he gave all the warning in the world to this cartel. He took out 11 narco-terrorists and sent a very powerful signal of deterrence. So it's not only securing the border, it's projecting power through sanctions on China and also in the Caribbean. This president is protecting the American people from this poison that was pouring in across our open southern border under Joe Biden.
And Congressman, before we run out of time, I do want to get your thoughts on one other thing. As a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, we're seeing today Vladimir Putin meeting with President Xi and North Korea's Kim Jong-un all getting together. In fact, President Trump was asked about whether he was concerned about that yesterday at the White House. Listen here.
China's having a massive military parade that President Putin and Kim Jong-un will be attending. Do you interpret that as a challenge to the U.S.? And are you concerned at all about those countries?
No.
Some sort of counterweight?
Not at all. China needs us, and I have a very good relationship with President Xi, as you know, but China needs us much more than we need them. No, I don't see that at all, no.
But they're all getting together. Clearly, there's optics of that. Congressman, your thoughts on that?
Well, it's obviously a response to a restoration of peace through strength. It's a response by these authoritarian regimes of American strength returning to the world stage. I mean, here you have a new commander-in-chief of the United States who has not only obliterated Iran's nuclear program, but has restored tough sanctions on Russia, has put secondary sanctions on India's oil purchases, which is really that plus Chinese energy purchases of Russia is what's funded Putin's war machine. The fact that this president has required more of our NATO allies in terms of their defense spending, this is a restoration of deterrence, and it's bringing Putin to the negotiating table. Remember what happened just a couple of weeks ago. President Trump brought Putin to Alaska, U.S. territory, mm-hmm. U.S. soil that used to be Russian soil and is no longer Russian soil, and enticed Putin to walk down a row of F-22 stealth fighters and flew a B-2 stealth bomber, nuclear-capable B-2 bomber, over his head with F-35s flying over top of him, projecting additional strength. Of course you see authoritarians running to each other because they know that they're dealing with a renewed, strong America.
There are optics in that, indeed. Kentucky's Congressman Andy Barr, as always, it's great to have you on, Congressman. Thank you for taking time to join us.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. This is Griff Jenkins filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Great Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be back.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
These particular drugs were probably headed to Trinidad or some other country in the Caribbean, at which point they just contribute to the instability these countries are facing. So the president's been very clear that he's going to use the full power of America and the full might of the United States to take on and eradicate these drug cartels, no matter where they're operating from and no matter how long they've been able to act with impunity. Those days are over.
Those days are over. That was Secretary of State Marco Rubio talking about the strike off the Venezuelan coast, taking out that Venezuelan drug-running boat. This is Griff Jenkins, your humble D.C. correspondent, filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show. And we are so lucky right now to have my colleague, my friend, and actually we share an office next to each other, correspondent Lucas Tomlinson, joining us to talk a little bit about this. And Lucas, I don't think our listeners really know what I know about you, which is not only did you graduate from the Naval Academy, not only did you honorably serve our country in the Navy for 6 years, but you actually at one point were deployed on a missile-guided frigate in the Caribbean on a drug interdiction mission. Talk to us.
I sure was. First of all, it's great to join you, Griff. Thanks for having me on. In 2003, we did a counter-drug deployment to the Caribbean, went through the Panama Canal, just like some of these warships that we're seeing sent by the Trump administration. You saw the USS Lake Erie, the guided missile cruiser, crossing the ditch, as they call it, the Panama Canal. A lot has changed, I'll say, between that deployment back in 2003 and today. Back then, we had a law enforcement detachment on board, and the idea was to disable these go-fast or speedboats, the drug boats carrying cocaine from South America. And even though the secretary was saying they're going to Trinidad, you know, ultimately the drugs, of course, are going to make their way to the United States.
Right. And
we're seeing the Pentagon issue shoot-to-kill orders. When that drug boat was destroyed, and President Trump shared the unclassified drone video, that was destroyed by Hellfire missiles. Not clear whether it was from a drone or perhaps from a helicopter. That's a different marching orders. Back in 2003, it was about disabling the vessel. Coast Guard law enforcement detachment on board would detain the individuals. They were, you know, chained to the mast, essentially, on the O2 level. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, put on a Coast Guard vessel back to the United States to stand trial. We knew something was up back in February when the Trump administration put Trinidad Aragua, the Venezuelan gang, on the Foreign Terrorist Organization list. That's essentially the kill list in Pentagon Argo.
Right.
Those groups, those terrorist groups are now, first of all, they're now terrorist groups, and they're also ripe for assassination. So what we're seeing now, we heard it from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth this morning on Fox and Friends, the mission is to kill these terrorists and to stop the drugs from coming into the United States. And that's what we saw. We also heard from Secretary Rubio. You played a clip there. He says they're going to wage combat on the cartels. He didn't say wage law enforcement. I think right. Our listeners know when you wage combat on somebody, that means to kill them.
You know, that's such a great insight and such a unique perspective. And by the way, I was telling Lucas that I was channeling him as best I could yesterday when Fox and Friends asked me to do a wall walk, as we call it, where I've got to explain that these now four missile-guided destroyers are in the waters off Venezuela and using acronyms like the helicopters, as you mentioned, the lamps. And I had to explain on the air, these are the light air born multi-purpose systems. No one calls them that. They're called lamps, and it's really remarkable stuff. And, you know, you mentioned Secretary Hegseth talking this morning on Fox and Friends. I do want to play just a little bit of that for you, Lucas. Cut great. 17. Listen here.
I can tell you that was definitely not artificial intelligence. I watched it live. We knew exactly who was in that boat. We knew exactly what they were doing, and we knew exactly who they represented. And that was Trinidad Aragua, a narco-terrorist organization designated by the United States trying to poison our country with illicit drugs. Last year, under the Biden administration, all 4 years, 100,000 Americans died from drug-related, from the use of drugs, many of which poured in from Central and South America through our southwest border. Now, we're sealing the border, but President Trump is willing to go on offense in ways that others have not been. And to send that clear signal to Trinidad Aragua, Cartel del Sol, and others emanating from Venezuela, we're not going to allow this kind of activity. You're poisoning our people. We've got incredible assets, and they are gathering in the region. So you want to try to traffic drugs? It's a new day. It's a different day. And so those 11 drug traffickers are no longer with us, sending a very clear signal that this is an activity the United States is not going to tolerate.
So a lot to unpack there, Griff. You know, he is in essence saying the orders were to shoot the kill. The 11 are no longer with us. The president is going on offense. He didn't say go on defense. This isn't about arresting and detaining the drug smugglers. And typically, I'll just walk you through one interdiction I was a part of. What they do is they set the boat on fire. They, you know, 30 bales of cocaine. They jump in the water knowing the U.S. military is going to fish them out of the water. But then you're spending hours on the high seas trying to put the fire out. Kind of ironic because it's sitting there in the Caribbean, right?
Right? Yeah.
But I think in my service record, it's documented that I've ingested like 30 bales of cocaine in my life. So I don't know if that explains a few things, Griff, or maybe to our viewers. But I remember when it was put in there. Anyway, this is just, I cannot stress enough, a completely different modus operandi. This is a complete change for the Pentagon. There's no way those three guided missile destroyers, the guided missile cruiser Lake Erie, that's brought in from the Pacific through the ditch, through the Panama Canal. There's even an attack submarine. Okay, the USS Newport News is lurking in the Caribbean.
We forget that.
There's the USS Iwo Jima. That's an amphibious assault ship that carries over 2,000 Marines. I saw some video today. They're doing some air assault training in Puerto Rico today. Okay. These forces are not there.
And that could be boots on the ground.
100%. Have you seen Clear and Present Danger? I'm kind of dating myself. This is a 30-year-old
movie.
You
did. So I was saying that. I want to get
– excuse me.
When we first came in, Lucas gets credit for saying, it reminds me of this movie. I think we've got a little sound of that for you.
Some say the greatest threat to America.
These drug cartels represent a clear and present danger to the national security of the United States.
Comes from other nations. Some say the greatest threat to America.
The course of action I'd suggest is a course of action I can't suggest.
Comes from within.
So you see a parallel.
There is a parallel. Now, where there is a striking difference is this isn't deniable operations. This is not the CIA going in there right now. This is the President of the United States saying minutes ago, we just destroyed, annihilated this drug-carrying speedboat carrying cocaine from Venezuela eventually to the United States. We heard the defense secretary. No one's denying this. That movie, though, was from 1994, based on a famous New York Times best-selling book by Tom Clancy, of course, about the U.S. government putting special forces on the ground in Colombia. They fire a missile from an F-18 Super Hornet. Probably actually, they don't even think that. Yeah, they had Super Hornets back then. I think it was the Charlie version, but let's not get in the weeds. A missile destroyed a cartel leader. And I turned to Griff, actually weeks ago, to be fair, I called this. I said, United States is going to start droning cartel leaders, and certainly we've seen a start going after this drug
load. Lucas, stay there. Griff Jenkins in for the Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be back.
We're running it back.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is the great Brian Kilmeade Show. Your D.C. correspondent, Griff Jenkins, filling in. But really, a special treat to have my colleague and office next door neighbor, Lucas Tomlinson, joining us. Because if you're just joining us, Lucas not only is one of the finest correspondents in the Washington, D.C. Bureau, but also a graduate of the Naval Academy, served 6 years honorably in the Navy, and was deployed on a missile-guided frigate in a drug interdiction operation. And just picking up where we left off, Lucas, so the point you're making is, I think, so significant, which is from what you were doing in 2003 is so different from a law enforcement perspective to now it is a shoot-to-kill mission. And everyone watching this video are like, wow. And as we were saying, it's got this tie to, what we see in that movie, Clear and Present Danger. But where does this go? Like, do you think we're going to see a lot more of this?
I do. And perhaps not just on the high seas. I mean, this is a lot of firepower. You don't put three guided missile destroyers, a guided missile cruiser, an attack submarine, also armed with Tomahawk cruise missiles. By the way, so each one of those warships I just mentioned could carry 30-plus, depending on loadout, 30 Tomahawk cruise missiles. We've seen what those did to Iran's nuclear facilities. Remember that guided missile submarine fired 30 cruise missiles into Iran?
Right.
We've seen the Tomahawks over the years. I don't think we have to tell our viewers what a Tomahawk is. Those carry a high explosive warhead. Those Tomahawks are not for firing on the high seas. They're for hitting targets ashore. So what's coming? We don't like to speculate in our business, but we're on the radio. Have some time. There could be strikes in Venezuela. You cannot rule it out. I don't have anything in my notebook on that, but you don't assemble this armada. You have over 2,000 Marines aboard USS Iwo Jima. There's a couple other amphibs down there off the coast of Venezuela. Some of them are doing air assaults in Puerto Rico, training. What are they training for? But clearly, as we saw with the drone strike in the Caribbean, this isn't just a show of force. The mission has changed, not just 20 years ago when I was doing the Caribbean, up till last week. The goal was always disable the vessel, sniper fires a bullet, disable the engine, interdict, arrest the terror suspects aboard these boats, the drug dealers, but then try them in the United States. Now they're killing them. Big difference.
Well, and, you know, we don't speculate in our business as correspondents, as journalists, but you do try and read the tea leaves a little bit. And your point is so well taken that you don't put that kind of firepower down in that region if there's not some sort of stronger plan afoot. And also, you're hearing initially, immediately after this one little boat taken out that killed 11 TDA guys, a little fast boat, you immediately heard very strong rhetoric from SecDef, Hegseth, from Marco Rubio. You know, not just the president talking about it. You saw
this is a policy shift.
This is a policy shift indeed. Hey, listen. So, in full disclosure, just to shift gears for a moment. So, in the hallways and in the offices, which are adjacent between myself and Lucas, we are often talking about sports. And in our studio, if anyone can see on the stream, but if not, I'll describe it for you. There's a small replica helmet of the heyday, the great days of the Washington Redskins, now known as the Commanders. And while I could not be more ecstatic, as is Lucas, to see the Commanders and Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin, Scary Terry, now Debo Samuel, take the field and hopefully destroy
fight
the Giants.
For old DC.
Fight for old DC. It was my colleague Lucas who put it on the map, the first guy to ask Trump, hey, Mr. President, what about going back to the Redskins' name? You asked him.
I did. It was 4th of July weekend. We flew on Air Force One with the president up to New Jersey, where he was spending the weekend after the fireworks display at the White House. And we were on our way back. We were sitting there on the ramp. You know, the turbines are spinning under the wing there on Air Force One. The president comes, and we got through the news of the day. But as you know, Griff, the president, he'll sit there and take questions forever. So you better have a deep bank of questions to choose from. And for the life of me, everything that was asked, news of day was asked. And then I just asked him, if the D.C. City Council doesn't vote to approve this new stadium, which at the time they hadn't, will you step in? Which maybe also a little foreshadowing taking over Washington, as we've seen recently, certainly with the police force and crime. The president said he's looking to do that. He credited Josh Harris, owner of the Redskins, the Commanders, excuse me. And then without even thinking, like I just did, I just blurred out, Mr. President, should the Commanders change the name back to Redskins? And he just looks at me and goes, do you want me to say something controversial? And I just gave him a,
sure.
Go for it. Yeah. We asked the questions. It's easy, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, I would. And then he probably had one of the most political answers of his time back in the White House. He goes, but winning changes everything. Commanders are winning, doing very well. Obviously, we were one win away from the Super Bowl last year, playing for an NFC title. And he circled back to, but I would. He goes, it just doesn't have the same ring to me. And I think most Redskins fans, Commanders fans, would probably say the same thing.
Yes.
Although he did make a point, not to sound political myself, but winning does have a way of changing things. And certainly the season we saw last year with Jaden Daniels at the helm, new coach Dan Quinn, new general manager Adam Peters, and what he did to get Terry McLaurin re-signed, I thought was brilliant. Yep. Not only did they get him back and extended him, but notice they gave him a day of big press, big headlines, this massive extension, $96 million. It wasn't until the day later, though, that the details of the deal came out. It's actually just 2 years guaranteed, and only, if you don't mind me saying this, and nobody breaks their radio, only $44 million guaranteed.
Only $44 million.
But the 2 year, I could live off that.
Oh, my goodness.
Certainly in Loudoun County,
yes,
in Leesburg.
Yes, look.
The fact that we got only 2 years guaranteed, $44 million. Now there's space to obviously got to extend Jaden Daniels, our star quarterback, eventually.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not going anywhere. Cap, we're keeping him.
Right. So you can't just spend all the money on everybody else. So we're excited. At the Giants this weekend.
So, I have no inside knowledge, and neither do you, but I would not be surprised if there is a return to the Redskins name. I really wouldn't, because not only did you put that into play for our listeners, so I built upon that.
And Griff, you brought it back. Can I just say
about it on Fox and Friends. And what happens? President Trump goes on a tweet storm on Truth Social.
And Charlie Hurd as well.
Charlie
Hurd mentioned the Indians
in
Cleveland.
The Indians, and now that's in play. We shall see. And, you know, to the point, to the president's point about, you know,
thank you for that, Griff, because it gave me elements all Sunday when I was at the White House, where I saw these things fired up. I'm like, that's our story now. Shift fire.
We shall see.
Shift your rudder.
But winning does change everything. However, I think the through and through lifelong Washington fans would love to win and also return to that Redskins glory. We shall see. In the final moments I've got, what do you see as the Commanders' season? You think we really are going to get back to possibly playoffs, possibly win?
We'll get back to the playoffs. That's not a bold prediction, of course, but it's going to be tougher this year. You know, last year we played a four-win schedule. Every year in the National Football League, your schedule is based on how you did the year before. So last year we played a four-win schedule. This year we play a 12-win schedule. So we are playing Green Bay, you know, we're playing, you know, Detroit. You know, we have some tough competition. We play the Chiefs. Now we're playing on primetime a bunch, which is nice.
Another,
but again, in the spotlight, Thursday night games, Monday night games, it's going to be a much tougher schedule. I'm still going to make a bold prediction here. You can run this back. 11 wins.
11 wins.
Mm-hmm. So small step back
new
from
Super
last
Bowl?
Year. Super Bowl is going to be tough.
Super Bowl is going to be tough.
I'll just leave it there.
All right. I bet you $20 we make it to the Super Bowl.
Oh, you're making me root against
we're putting this
Commanders
on record. It is September 3rd. You heard it here.
Okay.
Griff Jenkins challenging Lucas Tomlinson, $20. I
couple pints of Martin's Tavern.
Make it to the Super Bowl. We'll play this back on February 3rd and see what sort of result
we'll
have.
We'll see you next year, Griff. But I'm not going to root against the Commanders. This will be the happiest money I ever donate.
That's right.
If I have to.
It'll go straight to pints at the Dubliner.
I just don't want to jinx anything.
Lucas Tomlinson, D.C. correspondent, with a lot of experience in so many stories, particularly what we're seeing with the president, the Trump administration, taking on the drug cartels and Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro. This is Griff Jenkins filling in for Brian Kilmeade. We'll be back.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Oh, this is going to make you think, all right, this segment right here. This is your D.C. correspondent, Griff Jenkins, filling in for the great Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Radio Show. And you know him as the cyber guy, also known as Kurt Knudsen. And, Kurt, thanks for joining us. I had a chance to interview you on Fox and Friends just a day or so ago, and we were talking about these AI stuffed animals. And on TV, you just don't have as much time to really dig into these things. And so it's a great privilege to bring you on Brian Kilmeade's radio show and take a minute, because I think for parents out there, as you sort of lay out, there could be a real psychological harm, a danger, if you are a parent of a young child and you decide to allow these talking stuffed animals. I liken it back to Teddy Ruxpin of the days of the 80s when you had Teddy the talking teddy bear, but this is way more than that. What do you say, Kurt?
Well, Teddy Ruxpin, and that was harmless. That was just entertaining, right?
Yeah.
And these are creepy. And by the way, hats off to Brian Kilmeade for upgrading the host today. Griff, good to talk to you. You know,
save
it takes a
tape.
Courageous talent to do that. Hey, so aside from being a lot more creepy now, these toys we're encountering more and more often that seemingly are the next thing to put in your child's hands, they are less entertaining and a lot more concerning for a few reasons. And the big reason we were talking about is that these toys, now that they're AI powered, start to interact with your kid in a way that could replace human interaction. And what pediatricians are noticing is that kids that spend a little bit too much time with these toys, that it actually changes the brain wiring so that kids are starting to relate more to a toy than they can another human being. And when you start to see that, you go, oh, my Lord, this has got to be stopped, or you got to just put it in balance, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you write at CyberGuy about this and the fact that, you know, this AI teddy bear bot could replace, you know, that role of parents and peers in emotional development. So in terms of, as you often so saliently put out on CyberGuy, are like kind of tips like parents need to go and read a couple of thoughts you've got for them, because on the flip side of this, every kid wants the latest, greatest toy. And so as a parent, you don't want to deny your kid, you know, what everyone wants.
And at the same time, you know, a lot of parents are juggling a lot of stuff. At the same time, trying to do the right thing for their kids and maybe relying on technology at a time to do a little babysitting job. In this case, you want to turn off the babysitting mode on any of these AI stuffed toys. This isn't going to be the babysitter you want your kids to sit with by themselves. So young children can actually start trusting these toys more than family and friends. So, I mean, it gets weird and it gets concerning. So, you know, in the past, we've reported on this stuff, Griff, and like they'll record private moments, many of them. And of course, that raises enormous privacy concerns. So bottom line for parents, you know, these are the tips that we've discovered really work. Number one, I mean, it's just really being engaged with your kids. Like, what are they up to with that toy? So think of, first of all, AI toys from today going forward as really a supplement to your kid's life, not a substitute. So put people first. Always make sure that, like, you know, pay attention. Is your kid relating to this thing as if it's real? When you start to see that interaction in a young one where they're like, hey, they think this thing's real, that should be a warning flag for you. And also, I mean, immediately on, and I'm not saying don't use any of these AI toys, because some can help with brain development. They can help with critical thinking. But the very first thing you should do, whether it's a relative that has one or you saw someone get a gift or you're going to give one to someone or your child got one from, say, someone else in the family, check the privacy settings without delay. On any connected toy to the internet, the very first thing you need to do is say, all right, where are we with how much of our information we're sharing with the rest of the world and this company that made this? So get into those privacy settings and tighten them up as soon as you get it. And then, you know, if the toy is that interactive kind of toy, which many of these AI toys are, listen to how the toys are actually responding. In other words, stand in the room with your kid and listen to what the toys are actually saying. I mean, in the past, of course, in news, we're going to find the ones, and parents will flag us to the ones that are saying really creepy or horrible things. You're like, oh, my Lord, get this away from the kid immediately and put it in the wood chugger. But no, this is more and more just get a feeling of it. You know, how are they responding? Are they coaching them in a direction that seems healthy? Or is this something that's helping them maybe with math equations? You say, man, this is amazing. This is going to help my kid. Or are they starting to say something like, I don't know, yeah, it's okay if you take a nap now. Well, no, it's not, because you'll be up all night. So let's, you know, there's a lot of stuff you just have to pay attention to as a parent at this point. Just trust your gut. I mean, if it feels off, if it feels too invasive, you know it. So pull the plug on it.
It's such great advice. And, you know, it reminds me of the story we've covered this week. It's just heartbreaking. This young man that his AI chatbot, granted it wasn't a stuffed animal, but the chatbot, as the parents are suing OpenAI, saying that the chatbot really coached their son into suicide. Just heartbreaking. But on the flip side, you know, Kurt, I did at one point in a larger meeting many of us got to have with Sam Altman, the founder of OpenAI, to ask him questions. And he was talking about AI, because you understand AI better than most because of what you do. But, you know, for many of us, we're trying to learn everything about it. And I asked Sam Altman, what is, you know, if you could pick a goal that is the ultimate accomplishment of AI, what would it be? And he told me it would be education, that we could use AI to fundamentally change education so that literally
every kid, wherever they are, could have at their fingertips this advanced technology that could bring them educationally up to the same level as the one that gets the best education and has all the resources. So it's really very interesting. I've got about a minute left. Where do you see, whether it's these, you know, teddy bear AI things to where we're seeing AI go, where do you see it going?
Profound. It's profound. This is like when we got electricity. This is about when we, this is probably bigger than when we got the internet. And it suddenly we became aware of like, wait a minute, our, we can talk to somebody else over our keyboard and wait now, and how else can we connect? It's a profound moment in life. And it's one of those things where whether you're using AI or not actively, you're going to speak AI fluently no matter what you do in life. And we're hearing a lot of hype. Oh, it's going to kill all the jobs. Oh, it's going to do this. Oh, it's going to, you know, stop. It's going to make us all stupid because it's going to start thinking for us. And then it'll all team up, build its own robot and kill us all. Well, that may be true one day, but for the most part, that's hyped. So we're in a profound shift in America and in the world. And it is a moment. And Sam Altman, I mean, he is really, and you talk about AI technology, he's the guy to keep your eye on, undoubtedly. Kudos to you for getting that interview.
He is indeed. And Kurt the Cyber Guy will give you the best tips. And hey, if your kid's playing with it and it seems off, then it's off, as you say so well. Kurt the Cyber Guy, cyberguy.com. Thanks for taking time. This is Griff Jenkins on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks for listening.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And indeed, the most informative, entertaining, and best radio show in all of the land. This is your humble D.C. correspondent, Griff Jenkins, trying to fill the big shoes of Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show. And we have so many things to talk about, but at the heart of it, talk radio is about politics. And it always has been, it always will be. And we are fortunate to have one man in his whiteboard is the Tiger Woods, the Michael Jordan, the Tom Brady of politics, none other than my friend Karl Rove. Karl, thanks for being here.
Griff, I'm happy to be here, but do you want to start off with telling as big, you know, dissembling as much as you just did? Tom Brady, really? I look like Tom Brady? No, don't tell my wife that. She won't
I'm
agree.
Just saying, when it comes to politics and political insight, you are the greatest of all time. You are a GOAT indeed. And, you know, millions of Americans have trusted you and your whiteboard because you actually know what you're talking about. And you wrote, this is a few weeks ago, I think, you wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal, Karl, that really stuck out to me. And I looked it back up and you were talking about, you know, we're seeing these elections coming up in New Jersey and Virginia and in New York City are really the three races that I think everyone's focusing on right now. And there's quite a lot of difference in those. If you watch CNN's Harry Enten, he just yesterday was talking about that, you know, in Virginia and New Jersey, Mikey Sherrill and Abigail Spanberger are going to win big and it's going to be a big thing. But then in New York City, the self-avowed Democrat socialist Zoran Mamdani is clearly still the guy to beat, polling above 50%. And you wrote in your recent piece, if New York elects socialist Zoran Mamdani mayor this November, he will be the Democrat Party's face going into the midterms in 2026. The party would be better off with a more normal Democrat dominating this fall's election night coverage, but that's unlikely to happen. So now, you know, that was, I believe, a few weeks ago you wrote that. Now fast forward to what you're seeing in New Jersey and Virginia with Sherrill and Spanberger versus what's happening in New York. What's your read on it?
Well, I think you'd have to count the Democrats in New Jersey and Virginia as the favorites simply because they're blue states. But, you know, the polls have tightened in Virginia, and I suspect we're going to have relatively close races, whereas in New York, it's going to, I think, be a blowout for Mamdani. And look, I think Democrats, the heart of the Democratic Party today, the activist core, the people who scream and shout and dance about are going to be more enthused about his victory than whatever happens in Virginia and New Jersey. And it's going to be easy for Republicans to depict the new mayor of New York as the future of the Democratic Party than the governors of New Jersey or Virginia, assuming the Democrats win there. So, you know, it's just New York. Think about what happened in the 90s when the city of New York elected a Republican for the first time, I think, in 40 years. Not 40 years, 20 years. And how that impacted around the country. We had the election of a Republican mayor in Los Angeles and Dick Riordan. And you know, it was because these big cities, Los Angeles and New York, were suffering under Democratic rule. And yet, you know, there was a counter-revolt. Think, though, back a little bit further to the speech given at the 1984 convention by Jean Kirkpatrick, where she talked about San Francisco Democrats. And, you know, back then the image of San Francisco was very far left. I think the same thing is going to resonate in 2026 for Republicans to say, look at the future of the Democratic Party. Is that the kind of leadership that you, as a, you know, independent voter or a soft Democrat, really want to have for the country? And it'll be advantageous to the Republicans to make, you know, there's sort of a mutual aid society between a guy who wants to be a national Democratic figure and the Republicans who want him to be a national Democratic figure.
Wow, man. That's such a great point. I got a little bit of goosebumps there remembering Jean Kirkpatrick. And you're right. I vaguely remember seeing that clip played over and over in recent campaigns of her talking about the San Francisco Democrats. And, you know, Carl, we've now got something playing out in Chicago. I mean, look, J.B. Pritzker is a pretty authentic guy. He's a pretty good politician, and he's sort of, you know, at the top of the list of becoming the face of Democrats. Gavin Newsom, of course, is competing with his all caps Trump trolling social media posts, but Pritzker's taking it head on. But it's interesting, Carl, because Pritzker's getting way over his skis on the wrong side of cracking down on crime, on opposing crime. It's almost, I said this on the air yesterday on Outnumbered, it's almost like his message is, you know, leave our crime alone. We love it. We don't want you in here, Trump, because we don't want to give you a win. I want to play a little bit of an example that I thought really stood out of him just blatantly putting out disinformation and not being honest about the situation. Listen here. Cut 7 from Governor Pritzker.
Unidentifiable agents in unmarked vehicles with masks are planning to raid Latino communities and say they're targeting violent criminals. As we saw in Los Angeles, a very, very small percentage of the individuals they will target will be violent criminals.
That's just not true at the end of the day. And, you know, when you look at that raid on the pot farm in California, that was a warrant. They rescued unaccompanied children in there. They had convicted criminals. And yet Pritzker is doubling down. And it seems to me like that's going to put him in sort of that category, as you're pointing, you know, that Kirkpatrick was talking about.
Yeah. Look, interesting enough, there's a new mayor in San Francisco who points towards a better future for Democrats on this issue. And he's saying we need to add extra police in San Francisco. We need to crack down on homelessness. We need to have special units to go after violent crime. And if Pritzker was really smart and seeing this coming, he would have worked out with the mayor of Chicago that the Illinois State Police would do something to help the city of Chicago. It could have been he could have said, you know, we've got a special effort aimed at, you know, illegal guns. We would, you know, violent criminals, blah, blah, whatever. To allow himself to say we don't need the feds here because we're handling this ourselves. We don't need U.S. troops patrolling the streets of Chicago. Illinois State Troopers, Chicago Police, and the Cook County Sheriff's Office are stepping up their efforts. And at least it would have been so he'd be on a front foot rather than, as you say, looking like he's responding. You know, yeah, don't worry. We don't have a crime problem. That just doesn't fly.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I think you'll agree with me. The Democrats clearly right now have a messaging problem. However, I was struck an interesting comment by a rising star, I think, in the Democrat Party, and that is Maryland's Governor Wes Moore. He is talking about whether or not the Democrats have that messaging problem. Here's what he had to say. Listen to this.
One thing I do believe is that the Democrats don't have a messaging problem. There's a results problem. The Democrats have to deliver results and stop being the party of no and slow and start being the party of yes and now.
Interesting take.
Yeah, look, politics is partly about messaging, but it's even more about results. And this is why Joe Biden, for example, suffered, because he was out there with a messaging plan. The Bidenomics is working. He was deploying all of his surrogates. They had all of the kind of events you'd have. They were doing social media, blah, 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 blah. But it fell flat because the felt experience of people was it ain't working. And similarly, Democrats have got to be careful, as you point out with Pritzker. There's no crime problem. Yeah, look, you can look at some of the numbers and they, you know, major crimes are down, blah, 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 blah. But it's the sense of feeling that people have in their neighborhoods and communities that they are safer. The answer is no. And, you know, so Moore is right. You've got to get in there and be able to demonstrate that we, the Republicans, or we, the Democrats, are making changes that are making your life better. Democrats can complain all they like about Trump and exercising the authority he has under the D.C. home rule law to put a federal presence in on the streets. But the mayor of Washington, D.C., Bowser, she's pretty smart to say, you know what, we're going to be cooperating with these, because she realizes that, particularly in the southeast part of town, that community doesn't feel safe and they don't have enough resources, in part because the Republicans cut the budget of the District of Columbia. But they have a real issue, particularly in Southeast Washington, and she wants people to understand she's trying to solve the problem.
You know, there's a quiet nickname for her going around calling her MAGA Muriel, because she's leaning into it. But to your point, you're exactly right. I mean, I interviewed for my reporting a few weeks ago, Asiya Tamimi, a woman who is lifelong D.C., living in some of the higher crime neighborhoods, like you mentioned. And her husband was stabbed to death while trying to stop a robbery of an elderly man. Her eldest son is a paraplegic after being shot 9 times. And I asked her about the crackdown, President Trump's crackdown in D.C., and she said, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I welcome it. I want results. She, of course, said that she didn't want the National Guard troops to intimidate the community, but at the same time, she wants safety. We'll find out today from Attorney General Pam Bondi, the latest numbers of their crackdown is 1,761 arrests, 195 illegal guns off the streets. That's not nothing. I mean, 200 guns off the street, that's possibly 200 people that would have been shot, right?
Yeah. What's going to be really important is to be able to say, we got X number today, and last month it was Y. So you can show an improvement. I do think one of the weaknesses is going to be there's increased reporting about Southeast Washington, where there is no visible, you know, there's not as big a visible presence as there is in central downtown D.C. or in parts of, you know, DuPont Circle in the Northwest. So there's going to be increasingly, there may be people saying, you know what, nice of you to do that, but are you doing it in my neighborhood? Because our neighborhood is where there is a real problem. And so, yeah. I think Bowser is sensitive to that, which is why I think she's going to be increasingly pushing the feds to have a presence in Southeast Washington, or, you know, to help her, the Metropolitan Police Department, have a bigger presence there as well.
And just lastly, in the last minute I've got with you, Carl, your thoughts bringing it all the way back to Mamdani, you know, it looks like he is going to win. And there's no doubt that even though he's tried to walk back his positions on defund the police is one of the fundamental platform pillars. You can read it on the Democrat Socialists of America's website. That's who he is a part of. In it, they also write about abolishing the, quote, carceral state, which means to do away with prisons. And it just strikes me that if he does win, and God forbid, I spend a lot of time, you as well, in New York, becomes even more dangerous than it is because of Mamdani policies, that's going to be a unpleasant situation, sadly one that Republicans would probably capitalize on.
Yeah, look, New York is at risk, and he's likely to become the mayor, and it's not going to just simply be the question of public safety. He's going to be – the city of New York is heavily dependent upon taxing its more wealthy citizens, and they're going to be fleeing just as they've been fleeing in recent years. That is probably going to escalate, and we're talking about education. People are already complaining about the quality of education in New York City. That's going to continue to deteriorate. And so New York, we do not as a country want to see our big urban cities fail. But New York is going to be at great risk if he begins to implement the program that he is talking about. And even if he only serves one term, the damage will linger for years, if not decades, because it'll be hard to undo some of the things that he did. He plans on doing. And you know, we hate to see it because it is, you know, a bright, shining part of our country and should be safe. People should be prosperous. People should be able to count on the schools educating their kids, their communities being friendly and open and safe. And I'm not certain that's going to be the case if he becomes mayor, as it seems likely to be.
As always, I think you are spot on, and it's going to be interesting to watch to see what happens. The one and only Karl Rove. Karl, thanks for taking time today.
You bet. Thanks, Griff. Appreciate it.
All right. This is Griff Jenkins trying to fill the giant shoes of Brian Kilmeade on The Great Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be back.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Griff Jenkins, your humble D.C. correspondent, filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Great Brian Kilmeade Show. And we are going to just continue. I want to walk out just a little bit longer that great conversation we just had with Karl Rove. And he's talking about what's happening there in Chicago, rightfully pointing out that Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker now are tied at the hip. They own Chicago's chronic crime problem. I'd call it a crisis. To put the numbers in perspective, 58 shot over Labor Day weekend, 8 died. Go back to 4th of July, 44 were shot, 6 died. In 2024, 573 people were murdered, were killed in Chicago. It is the highest in the country for the 13th straight year. So, here at Fox, as we've often said, we report, you decide. We sent Fox out on the streets of Chicago to ask people how they feel about the crime, how they feel about the prospect of President Trump cracking down in the Windy City. Listen here.
What do you think about President Trump? He's offered to provide assistance to help make Chicago safe, to bring in potential National Guard, potential, you know, federal law enforcement officers and agencies to give help to Chicago. How do you feel about getting help to make your city safe?
Help is needed.
How do you feel? Do you think that protecting and making Chicago safe, should that be a political issue?
I think Chicago can take all the help we need. So if it turns into a political issue, then tomato, tomato. If it works for the environment, for the safety of, you know, people. The people, then I'm with it. Yeah.
National Guard coming here is not going to stop anything.
I think it's a good idea. Because, look, we need more. I mean, what's wrong with more help?
Right. Let me explain something. When you step outside your apartment or your house, you're in a war zone. You don't have to be in Iraq and Afghanistan. And if you think I'm lying, let's check out the news every day.
He's only going to Chicago
in every state that is a Democratic state. Tell me why.
But you think that President Trump could step in and help?
Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah. I mean, I don't see no harm in that.
So that's the view of the Chicago residents. And as we have talked a lot about, and that is the stat, you can show people stats, but what the reality is, the perception that people feel, that's what's driving. And it's hard to not at least give President Trump some credit for saying, you know what? Those residents can have it a different way, and I'm going to try and lean in. This is Griff Jenkins filling in on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Stick with us. We got a lot more coming up.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It is the fastest, most entertaining and educational show in America. This is DC correspondent Griff Jenkins filling in for Brian Kilmeade on the Great Brian Kilmeade Show. And in terms of being educational, let's go MAGA for a little bit. Actually, let's go MAHA. That is, of course, being led by RFK Jr., HHS Secretary, and trying to get our diets healthier, changing the foods that we are eating. And we're lucky now to have Nina Teicholz joining us, New York Times best-selling author of The Big Fat Surprise, While Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. You can follow her on X at Big Fat Surprise. And Nina, it's great to have you on because I have two daughters who are a little bit older, 19 and just turned 24. But I remember the days of having to pack a lunch. And you have a great piece up on Fox News Today, which are 5 ways MAHA moms can fix kids' junk food problem at school lunches nationwide. At the very top of the piece, Nina, I was surprised when you say that USDA-approved foods for schools are still shockingly Doritos, Cheetos, and single-serving size cups of Lucky Charms. Let's talk about, you got 5 tips for MAHA moms looking to fix things. What are they?
Well, thanks for having me on. Yes, it's not just Doritos and Cheetos, but there are, you know, foods from PepsiCo and Nestle and all these really sort of ultra-processed junk foods that are in school cafeterias, they are in vending machines, they are in school stores. And so there are key steps that parents can take to try to basically fill their kids up so they're not hungry during the day and they don't want a snack. One of them, the top one I would say, is don't forget breakfast. And here I mean filling your kit up on protein and fat. So like eggs, bacon, butter, those are excellent breakfasts. Eggs are nature's multivitamins. It has 12 essential vitamins and 14 minerals, as well as choline, which is really essential and linked to cognitive function. Protein fills you up and is more satiating. And it should come with the fat that comes with it to help digest it. And that is what will keep your kids stable, their mood stable, will fuel them up for the day. It will keep hunger at bay. It will enable them to focus and study and be the students that they want to be and that you want your kids to be.
Eggs and bacon. You had me at that. I'm all in. Now, you know, there's been decades of debates on, and certainly as a 54-year-old middle-aged guy, I once cared about it. I exercised quite a bit, run a lot of marathons and stuff. But the debate over carbs, cutting carbs, carbs don't matter. Obviously, everybody loves bread and pasta, but that's one of your points to lay off the carbs.
You know, eating carbs, carbohydrates, really of any kind, even if, you know, even steel cut oats in the morning, those are starches, and they really are sugar molecules holding hands that as soon as you eat them, they become sugar in your bloodstream. And if you start your day that way or you start your kids' day that way, that's really sending them on a blood sugar roller coaster. Their blood sugar spikes up, then it comes crashing down. When it's down, it gives them, it creates hunger and cravings for more food. You know, if you start your day on cereal, you're basically like by 10, 11, you're starving. Whereas if you fill up on protein, that will really keep you all the way through lunchtime. So I think at all costs really want to avoid this blood sugar roller coaster for kids. And that means shifting them away from sugars, starches, even high sugar fruits can have that same effect, and trying to feed them instead, meat and cheese and foods that will really give them the satiety that they need to stay full and fuel their brains.
Another one of your tips, Nina, I think is really fascinating, and that is you say cut thin to win. So what does that mean?
Well, that's a version of what we've just been discussing, but it's the carbs versus the proteins and fats, right? So cut thin is cut the bread and the sandwich thin. Keep it thin, minimize the bread portion, and fill up on the good fillings. You know, lunch meats are fine. High quality is great to avoid and long ingredient lists with a bunch of fillers and additives. But, you know, lunch meats, cheese, salad, lettuce, tomato, all of that will make a much healthier sandwich than a mostly bread sandwich.
You know, you talk about lunch meat, and it immediately makes me thinking of, you know, we've heard so much about don't have processed foods and the lunch meat you buy, which, I haven't heeded that advice and cut out buying, you know, turkey and ham at the deli because I love a sandwich like anybody else. But I do want to get your thoughts on, like, should you look to try and cut out some of the processed lunch meat we buy?
I think that the higher quality, the better. But, you know, humans have been curing meats for centuries because that is the way that you can transport meats and preserve them over time. Think about, you know, we have no problem with prosciutto in Italy. Why should we have the problem with lunch meats back at home? I mean, the better quality, the better, of course. But it's still the way that you can transport a high-quality protein for your kid and allow it to last through the day. I mean, we've been doing that for tens of thousands of years, so we should not doubt that strategy.
Okay, Nina, look, you know, you just made me feel bad. I'm just going to confess to this, and you're going to laugh because you have a PhD in nutrition, and you're talking, it's such a great point, like we don't, you know, look at prosciutto and see it as the same as going in buying our boar's head roasted turkey from the deli. But you're right, it's the same. And so my confession is I've just spent the last 5 days in New York filling in and hosting some various things. And there's a great new fancy Italian deli across the street from Fox News on 6th Avenue. And I went in and paid like $20 for this delicious prosciutto soppressata sub-type sandwich. And I walked out feeling so good about myself going, you know, at least this is like, you know, really healthy. But actually, it's not any different, is it?
I think, you know, obviously, if you have a really long ingredient list of fillers and additives in food, in any kind of food, that's not healthy for you. But, you know, high quality protein is really what we all need to fuel ourselves through the day and what kids need to fuel their bodies and their brains. They are, you know, we are sending them to school with things like granola bars, which have many of those energy bars have the sugar content higher than a Snickers bar or even some of those nut bars. We think of them and they have a health halo over them, but they are really, they have the same impact on your blood sugar as some of these, as a candy bar. So we really need to think about like, what are the basic choices that we're making? It's better to send your kid to school with like a roll up of meat and cheese than it is to send them with some fancy granola bar, which will, again, it's a choice between spiking blood sugar or keeping blood sugar constant, keeping mood constant, keeping your child filled up during the day so they can study and learn and fuel their bodies.
Now, I do, you end this piece with what I think is the most interesting message to Maha people and Maha moms, And that is, you think parents should keep pressure on the Trump administration to make meaningful reforms to these dietary guidelines. Elaborate on that.
Well, we have had dietary guidelines since 1980. 1980 is also the very same year that our obesity rates went from in the low teens and turned sharply upwards to the astronomical levels that they are today. And what the dietary guidelines did, remember, I know we don't use the food pyramid anymore, but it's still the what people remember, that big bottom slab, which still remains true today, which is a lot of servings, 6 to 10 grains of servings of grains, breads, pasta. Okay, so that's all carbohydrates. Americans followed that recommendation. In the past 3 years, we've increased our grain consumption by 40%. So we followed that. We increased grains. We reduced fat, the low-fat diet. We also reduced consumption of meat and whole milk and all these natural foods that we've been eating. Those guidelines have really remained virtually unchanged for the past 45 years. And we now have an administration that is willing to make real changes. I mean, FDA Commissioner Marty McCarry came out just the other day, yet again, saying they're going to remove the cap on saturated fat. That's outdated medical dogma and should not be in the guidelines. That would be a really, truly revolutionary change.
Yeah.
But we have to keep the pressure on because, you know, the interest in Washington, D.C., as we all know, the ultra-processed food companies, the ag interests, there's so many interests that, or as they would call them, stakeholders that are trying to influence this process. And what we as parents and as people really need is advice from the government. I mean, if we have to have dietary guidelines, they need to be right. They need to be not propelling forward obesity and diabetes. They need to give Americans advice that helps them truly stay healthy, which is not what the current dietary guidelines do.
Keep that pressure up. And just in the last question I've got for you, Nina, and that is, you know, when you talk about many of these companies, do you feel like the MAHA movement and RFK Jr. actually has had some success, some actual tangible results when it comes to many of these companies voluntarily choosing to make changes?
This is the first time I've been in this space for 20 years, and I would say this is really the first time that I've seen an administration really have big food kicked back on its heels. They're making changes. They are taking proactive moves. They're getting rid of petroleum-based dyes and certain additives. I think, you know, Michelle Obama tried this, and she wanted to go up against Pepsi and Coke, and then she sort of retreated from that platform. But this administration has really stuck to its guns, and I think it's made a lot of progress. And again, it's the changes in the dietary guidelines will be the most influential policy change that this administration makes.
Yeah, it's a good point, and someone that obviously has a lot of experience. And I remember First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Go campaign. Well, guess who decided to get up and go? That was the Trump administration. It'll be fascinating to see where it goes. Nina Teicholz, thank you for giving us your insight and reminding me that tomorrow we're starting the day with eggs and bacon. Thanks for being here, Nina.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Nina Teicholz. You can follow her on X at Big Fat Surprise. You might learn something and could be good for MAHA moms packing those lunches. This is your D.C. correspondent, Griff Jenkins, filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Great Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
This is the Great Brian Kilmeade Show. Griff Jenkins, your DC correspondent, filling in. And we cannot avoid the greatest video you will see today. If you have not seen this, out of Jacksonville, Florida, a young 5-year-old boy named William woke up hungry. And granted, we just talked to Dr. Nina Teicholz about packing those kids' lunches. Well, sometimes really adventurous, brave, hungry toddlers just wake up and think, I gotta have me some Chick-fil-A for breakfast. And this is the most endearing video. If you haven't seen it, just Google boy walks to Chick-fil-A and it'll pop up everywhere. It's a video put out by the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office because Chick-fil-A realized a five-year-old was just sitting in the restaurant by himself eating after showing up by himself in the early hours and buying breakfast. They call the sheriffs out. They come over and they get him. Then they take him home to his house. So the first clip I want to play for you here is when the sheriffs realized that young William was just having his breakfast. Listen.
We arrived on scene, and as we walked in, we see a little kid sitting at the table eating his breakfast with one of the managers. We asked where he came from, and he kept saying he walked to Chick-fil-A.
You know where your house is, right, honey?
It's right across the street, right over there.
Okay, cool.
We gathered him up. I walked him to the back of my patrol car.
Are you going to get me in jail?
No, I'm not going to put you in jail. And we started checking here.
All right, buddy, where's your house at? Is it right here?
None of these doors are open. None of these garages are open.
So then he explained that he had a white fence.
That's where it is.
Right here?
Yeah.
And that's when we pulled up in the driveway. And then we realized that the call box wasn't working. We had no way to get through the gate.
My initial thoughts were, I can't believe he came out of here. It's the most secure house on that block in reference to having a fence all the way around, front, back, sides.
So he didn't live across the street. Clearly, the sheriff's had to get him home. But maybe the biggest shock of this video is when the parents realized, wait, William did what? Listen here.
Police, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, do you have a son named Lee?
William.
Yeah, a little boy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was down at the Chick-fil-A.
Are you kidding me?
No, we have him in our police car. You want to come get him?
You could just see the look on his face. It would be for any parent, including myself. It's disbelief.
Do you have any idea how he got out?
Yeah, he just got unlocked the front door, but he's never done that.
He said he opened the gate and couldn't find y'all and went down the street.
I know he knows how to get to Chick-fil-A because we walked there. I would have never expected him to come down here on his own in the morning before anybody else in the house was up.
So there you have it. If you haven't seen this, you've got to go online and watch it. And, you know, kids do the darndest things. And it's quite touching not only to see this young, adventurous boy, William, that just wanted – he just wanted some Chick-fil-A. You can't blame him for that. But the parents completely shocked that he was what? He was where? They didn't even know he wasn't in the house because what five-year-old just wakes up and walks out the door and goes to Chick-fil-A? But there is, I think, and I'm not exactly sure how young William's parents ultimately handled it. The sheriff's deputies obviously very smart to not make him feel like, well, you did something wrong and make him feel shame, because there is a certain fearlessness. And not only is it a cute, endearing video, it reminds us that we once were children when we were fearless. And you hear in William's voice that it didn't startle him in the slightest bit that he had woken up and walked by himself as a five-year-old down to Chick-fil-A to have breakfast. There's an innocence, a fearlessness, a confidence, an innocence that, you know, we as grown adults would yearn just to have a little bit of that youthful sense of adventure and willingness to go out and do something that would shock the world. You know, you got to be bold. You only live once, right? YOLO, that's what they say. You only live once. But at the end of the day, go watch the video. It'll warm your heart. It's the best thing out there you're going to see today. And it may remind us that sometimes we ought to tap into our younger William self. And as William Griffin Jenkins, I know I'm going to take that advice. It is great to be with you, Griff Jenkins, filling in on the great Brian Kilmeade show. Thank you for listening, and check out that video.